Welcome to ADHD Mums. This is for the thoughts that you don't say at school pickup. The ones that sound a bit too honest, a bit too much. But here, we say it anyway. No filters, no performance. I'm Jane. Let's jump into it.
I have been sitting with this for weeks. The birthday of ADHD Mums, launching season 4. In all honesty, that was a good few weeks ago. I didn't celebrate the birthday because I couldn't figure out for the life of me how to wrap up a season that hadn't gone the way that I said it would go in the launch episode. So I asked the audience on Instagram and Facebook, would you like a season 3 wrap up? I was pretty confident that people would say no. 85% of you said that you wanted a wrap up season and an opener of season 4. 85%. I sat on the couch looking at the poll and I thought, oh no. I was really hoping it would be 50-50 and then I could say, oh, no one really wanted it. And I would just roll into season 4, fresh start, no looking back. But 85% of you said that you would like one, so here we are. This is not a victory lap. This is some hard truths about how season 3 went. What I promised you in the launch episode, feel free to not re-listen to it because it is not what happened in season 3. I said no more explaining, just strategy. I said, we are done with ADHD awareness. We are done with the system not being built for us. We are done with explaining ADHD to people who don't believe it's real. I said, we are going to demand a seat at the table. I had a plan. Mini-series mapped out. Schools, hormones, medication, misdiagnosis. We did do it. I delivered everything as promised. So why am I sitting here telling you that we didn't do what was planned? Because the truth is, I was quietly falling apart whilst I made this season. A lot of you would know I had 2 lipedema operations last year. If you don't know what that is, chronic illness. It affects mainly women. It's painful and not well understood. The surgery, brutal. There is episodes about it in the show notes. And I was unable to walk. I had major infections, very, very unwell for a good 4 to 5 months of last year. That was whilst I was demanding a seat at the table. If you are wondering, did I know I was going to have 2 lipedema operations when I announced that we were going to demand a seat at the table? Yes, I did. I'm a bit of a trooper. I cooked a roast chicken after my second C-section, but I no longer use that as a badge of honour with my brave and hardiness. That is a badge of honour with the lack of boundaries and how much pressure I put myself under. No one asked me to cook that roast chicken. That was me. 2 surgeries, recovery, podcast, 3 kids, we moved house. There was so much going on. Midway through the season, I also stopped sleeping. I mean 2 or 3 hours a night, per night, for weeks. Not because my kids were waking, but because my body wouldn't let me. I would wake at 3 a.m, 2 a.m, and that would be it. I just kept recording episodes anyway. In season 3, Dr. Sunita Chelva came on the podcast. She's one of the few doctors in Australia that really understands women, that works within the menopausal space. I nearly cancelled her and pretended one of my kids was sick because I felt like I couldn't smile. I felt like I couldn't do an interview. I couldn't sit and look engaged and ask questions for an hour. I didn't have it in me. But I procrastinated for so long on cancelling that then she turned up and I still hadn't cancelled. So we started recording. And somewhere in the middle of the podcast, I started describing what was happening to me, thinking I would edit it all out because I just wanted someone to hear. The sleep, the rage, the way the medication wasn't working the way it used to. And I was crying completely in the middle of the podcast. And I really thought that she was going to say, you're recovering from major surgery. That's probably what it is. Be kind to yourself. And I was like, oh my fucking God, could have got that from my husband. But she didn't say that. She didn't say, let's talk about this off air. She didn't give me a referral or tell me to go see my own doctor. She just said, you're perimenopausal, straight to my face, mid-record, whilst I was crying. And I knew that that was right because I've never done hormones well. When I was 15, I read the DSM. And that is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual on Mental Disorders. How neurodivergent of me. When I read the manual, I walked into my parents' room one night and I told them that I had diagnosed myself bipolar. They said, surely you are not, and swept that under the rug. But it wasn't bipolar. It was hormones doing what hormones do to a woman with ADHD who's been holding it together. I've always known that my hormones can present with bipolar type symptoms, being autistic with ADHD, when my hormones start to shift, I do start to meet criteria for bipolar. I've been to a clinical psychologist and checked, and I definitely don't have bipolar. However, late last year, perimenopause started to hit, and I started to feel extremely up and down, like I used to feel when I was in puberty. And I started to fall apart, not in a manageable way, not in a nice way, like I cried quietly. I started to destroy my life, angry with the version of me that had spent 40 years being fine, being the girl who could hold it together, doesn't need help, highly functioning, being capable, angry that I'd put up with it, angry that nobody had seen it, angry that nobody had helped me, angry that I'd been in therapy for 20 years of that and no one had told me. Angry I had thought to myself, there's something wrong with me, when actually I was just doing what I had to do to survive being an ADHD girl in a world that didn't have language for me yet. And once Sunita said the word perimenopause, a lot of other things started to line up. One of the other things that happened late last year was that I gave up on the NDIS. The work I did in season 3, demanding a seat at the table, was really focused on the NDIS. The work I did around politicians who run the NDIS was a huge part of season 3. Community submissions, over 1,500 lived experiences collected through a jot form, change petition, briefs that went to state and federal MPs, reels that went viral, Sunrise interviews, ABC News, 10, we did the work. But somewhere through the season, I just started to give up on the politicians that were running it. Mark Butler did his press address, the Federal Health Minister of Australia speaking about autism. The way he spoke about it, the language he used, the framing he chose, the way he spoke about autistic people like they were a budget line rather than being human beings, was so far from being neuroaffirming that I knew in my bones that this man had no lived experience. Not even just him, but the advisors writing the words, anyone in the room. And honestly, I gave up. I gave up on the idea that the people who run the systems we live inside are ever going to listen. Somewhere watching Mark Butler, I realised it's not going to happen. Not like that, not from them. And this is the same year that my body was telling me to stop overfunctioning at home. I realised partway through season 3, when I said we were going to demand a seat at the table and not stop until we get one, I realised that there was no seat at the table, not because we hadn't asked enough, not because we didn't show up, but because the people at the table benefit from us not being there. And we can't fix that by asking better. I'm not done with advocacy work, but I'm done with the version of it that asks the politicians to care. I don't believe they do. I also interviewed Rose Jackson, Minister for Mental Health in New South Wales. She wanted to come on to talk about the New South Wales ADHD reforms. She was nice. The team was professional. The interview happened. But somewhere in that conversation, I realised that I was being used. I was a vehicle for the community to hear the same lines that they say on TV. I was a microphone at best, a content opportunity. I was a way for them to look like they were listening without actually listening. After the interview, I sat in my car. And I didn't cry, didn't text anyone. I just sat there. It wasn't her specifically. It was all of them. Recently this year, I've had premiers, leaders in mental health, health ministers contact me to come on the podcast. However, none of them seem willing to answer any actual questions. They just want to re-announce the shit they're already doing, which doesn't even necessarily translate to anything actually changing for the families that I talk to. And I'm not going to waste my fucking time being a vehicle for them to say their own shit message that gets edited out of TV. Have you ever noticed with the politicians that they do a full media release and only like 1 minute of it is usable? Because they don't answer anything or say anything? I'm not going to put myself through listening to that or putting it out as in a place of an episode and expect you to listen to it. Until a politician can come on and actually announce something useful, we're not doing any more politicians. Now, I will say that is not including Jordan St. John. He's a senator that came on and he advocates hard for the disability community. He's an ADHDer himself, and I do not mean him. I mean the people that want to come on and repeat the same shit that they talk on TV. Now, you might think to yourself, geez, Jane's sounding pretty angry. Jane's sounding wound up. Last year, I really started to unlearn the good girl conditioning, the operating system that so many of us come from. In the middle of all of this, I went into a full hyperfocus on the damage of ADHD myths. You might have heard some of the episodes, the ADHD myths, where I sing with the Ghostbusters theme to start with. I thought that was so cool when I recorded it. Now I listen to it and cringe a little bit. I can't take it down because there's too much work involved. Back when this was happening, I went into a research hole on myths. The myth that high-functioning women can't have ADHD. I started off thinking, okay, this is a myth. I'll just do the episode. We'll bust it easy. But then I started to think to myself that high-functioning women can't have ADHD. What does that cost us? Not is it true? We know it's not. But what does it cost? What does it cost to a woman to spend 30 to 40 years or more thinking she can't have ADHD because she's functioning? What does it cost her to be the one that organises everything? What does it cost her to be the personal assistant for her family? What does it cost her to be the only one reading the room, anticipating the needs? Absorbing it all, never letting a ball drop. What does it cost her body? What does it cost her marriage? And what does it cost her kids? Recently, a friend said to me that she's sick of hearing ADHD women burning out and then talking about their husband or their partner as being supportive. And she said, supportive of what? And I said, of the woman. She said, supportive of what? Supporting her to do it all while they do nothing. Initially, I was taken back, and then I thought to myself, there does seem to be a lot of high-functioning women in burnout. Some of them have supportive partners. Is support really supporting the high-functioning woman to have a short break and then just go back to high-functioning? I live my life with my foot on the accelerator all the time. It's not a great trait. I don't recommend it. And when I hit burnout, like I can't get out of bed, burnout, take my foot off the accelerator like 10 or 20%. And then when I feel slightly better, I shove it back down. That's high-functioning women. And when this woman said to me, supportive of what? Having a supportive partner so women can burn themselves out, that's not support. Why don't they actually help? That's a good point, isn't it? And I went so deep into what it costs to be a high-functioning ADHD woman, the cost that I'm paying, the cost that I don't know that I'm paying, the cost to our children. The myth isn't just a wrong idea. That myth that high-functioning women can't have ADHD or don't need support because they look okay, and we all schedule our breakdown that we have for 5 minutes in the car, and then we wipe our tears and smile, and that's okay because we've scheduled it. We've had a quick cry when it's convenient for everyone else around us. These myths made us into the women that we are. It built us. The myth said that you can't have ADHD if you're functioning. So we functioned harder. We became personal assistants, some of us. If you look at the role of a personal assistant, an ADHDer doesn't really fit, right? All the little details, anticipating, organizing, a lot of the things within that role are not things that we enjoy or are good at or are easy for us. But we became the one that could do it all. Because the myth says that the ones that can't do that are the only ones that have the real condition. So the cost of being the one who could is the cost that we've been paying. That what you've been paying, what a generation of late diagnosed ADHD women have been paying. And that's what season 3 was actually about. I just didn't know it when I was making it. The episodes that landed the hardest in season 3 were not the strategy ones. The identity episodes name who we became to survive. They were not the ones about having a hallway hook and how that will change your world. They were the ones that were about you were the good girl and that's why you're falling apart now. You learn to carry responsibility too early. Now, overstimulated before 7 a.m. and no one sees the work. That was with Rachel Few. Rachel was somebody that I said that I'd like to be friends with and did nothing about. I invited her over for a podcast interview because I'd never set up my studio here before. And I thought, oh, that seems like a kind person who'll probably let me fumble around for a long period. And when we sat down and got the tech organized, I realized that I hadn't actually prepared anything, which was so embarrassing. So then I sat down and thought, well, let's just wing it. It was a really long episode and I wasn't sure how it would go. That was one of the top hits for the whole season. It has the highest play count for any identity episode in season 3. And it's Rachel and I, who have never met before, talking for nearly an hour and a half about how ADHD affects your identity. Now, I looked at the analytics at the end of the season. Every single identity episode that I did was in the top 10. A lot of people weren't just clicking, they were finishing and sharing all of those identity episodes. So many emails from women saying, that was me, that's who I am. Thank you for doing this. So we weren't doing a strategy season. We were walking through something else together, something that I didn't even know had a name. What happens after diagnosis when you have the medication or you choose not to take the medication? When the diagnosis isn't the fix, when you've done all the things and you're still sitting at the kitchen bench at 9 o'clock, wondering who you are if you stopped organizing for everyone. And that's the thing that no one's naming. That's what we were doing this season underneath the strategy. Right now, we're in the pushback. And this is a reflection of where I'm at too. I've started saying no, quietly, to friends, family, to the unwritten contract I had with myself about who I am meant to be in this house, in this marriage, in this life. I always thought if I pushed back too much, they would start to say no. But now I'm wondering, why didn't I push back on all of these things before? And honestly, it's because I was scared. I was trained not to. The myth says that high-functioning women like me don't need help. I built a marriage, a business, a household, a life on being the one that could. I had 3 kids under 3.5. I'd love to say that was an accident. I planned that because I said, I can. It's not that hard. God help me, that was so arrogant. I cannot believe I said that. What actually was happening was my daughter was developmentally delayed, and so she wasn't moving. Having a toddler and babies was a completely different game. And I was pregnant with my third child before the older two started moving, right? So I had two that kind of like sitting there looking at the wall and eating things. And then a newborn. I didn't think it would be that bad until it exploded. And my third son was born, who was incredibly hyperactive. And the other two started moving at the same time. But if I stopped being the one that could, who am I? Because saying no has always felt to me like I'm saying, I'm not the strong, capable one. I'm not who I thought I was. Because the woman who pushes back is a different woman to the woman that I've been for nearly 40 years. And I don't know who this woman is. I've got fucking no idea what I'm doing. This isn't a glow-up story. I haven't figured it out. I'm not on the other side. By saying no a few times doesn't mean that you are going to suddenly figure out who you are and everything's going to change. But right now, while I'm recording this, while you're listening to this, I do not know who I am if I am not burnt out. I have lived in a state of over-functioning for so long that I do not know what regulated looks like. I don't know what rested feels like. I don't know what I want when I'm not anticipating what everyone else needs. I don't know what I would choose if I wasn't choosing for 5 people. I am in that place right now. A lot of you will resonate with this because a lot of you are in this place too, but we don't know what to call it yet. At the start of season 3, I promised you a strategy and I delivered it. I'm proud of the work. I'm proud of the season. We were going through what comes after the diagnosis, what comes after meds aren't the answer. But what happens when we're doing strategy and we're doing the strategies, but we're not okay inside? Season 3 looked like a strategy season, but it was actually the season that we started to name the identity rupture. Who are we as people? After we get diagnosed, after we try meds or not, after we do the strategies, maybe we set the timers, we do the habits. Who are we then? Sometimes it was the recovery from surgery. Sometimes it was no sleep. Sometimes it was a school meeting that I had that gutted me. Sometimes it was an interview that broke something inside me politically. And I started to realize people aren't listening with the NDIS. I don't think the politicians care. It's not that they don't know, it feels like they don't care. When I was in these positions, someone would email me or they'd post in the group. Sometimes people send me WhatsApp messages with voicemails and it's actually telling me what an episode meant to them. And then I would strip back and go, that's why I'm doing it. You kept me going last year. You kept me upbeat. And this ADHD mum community gives so much back to me. I kept thinking that I needed to do more for the community. I needed the politicians to look at the reforms for the medication. I needed the media to change. I needed the stigma to move. I needed the myths to start being debunked so there was no more Uncle Ned going, ADHD isn't real, you just need to parent better. I kept thinking that that's what I needed to do for the community. But you know what? I think we need to work together to look inside ourselves as a community and as people. I have made it through this season because of you, the listeners, and we are holding each other together. Thank you so much for all the downloads. We've hit 1 million downloads last season. The way that we see change is we band together and we demand it. And maybe the change isn't from the politicians, because I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for them. The change that we can see is within ourselves. And that's where we're going to start for next season. I'll see you Thursday. Check out the season 4 launch. I think it's important that you know I am not your guide. I'm the woman next to you in the car park going, oh, wait, do you do that too? Are you doing this too? Are we all doing it? Oh, my God, we should all stop doing it. That's who I am. Please send me an email, a listener question. I would really love to have more listener questions in season 4. I've got my WhatsApp number on the show notes. Every single day I wait hoping that someone will send me an audio question and they don't. Please send me an audio question or even, did you love this episode? What did you get out of it? Sometimes I put my heart and my soul out there in an episode and I don't know how it's landed. If you would ever love to share with me how you're feeling, what you'd love to see more of, or feedback that you've got, please send me a WhatsApp. I listen to them, I play them, and I write episodes from them. Thank you so much. If today's episode hit a little bit too close to home, then send it to a friend who also just popped out and needed a minute. This is ADHD Mums. We'll do it again next week.